Thank you so much for joining us for our July workshop. It's so nice to meet you. My name's Erin. I've emailed many of you, if not all of you, to sort of get things arranged for this weekend. But hope you guys have lots of fun, and I'm going to pass it off to my colleague, Doug Lloyd.
Hi, everybody. It was great to meet many of you yesterday at the reception. I haven't had a chance to meet all of you yet or talk to all of you in depth, but I hope I have that opportunity some point over the weekend. I just wanted to quickly run down the schedule for today. Today is our more jam-packed of the 2 days, so we're going to have a session right now with David. After that, I'll go through the CS50 core curriculum, what is in sort of the package of CS50, CS50 AP, and CS50X. We'll have a couple of breakout tracks, a campus tour, lunch, a couple more sessions later this afternoon about managing classrooms, how we manage the classrooms here, and how some of those strategies might come into play managing classrooms for you as well. But without any further ado, let's just get started right away. Let me introduce David Malin to talk about CS50.
Thank you. Thanks. Well, welcome and good morning, everyone. Thanks. So we are super excited to have so many of you here with us this weekend. Looking forward to getting to know everyone. Among the goals for the weekend are to do exactly this first and foremost, to create a community and a network among those of you who are here and those of you who have come before you. Indeed, you'll be meeting a whole range of other teachers who are now accessible to you online and so forth. And as Doug and Erin have said, today and tomorrow will be about introducing you to some of the resources that CS50 provides, to the curriculum itself, and to the tools that we aspire to equip teachers around the world now with. In fact, as I was thinking about today and our last workshop a few weeks ago, I was thinking back to the first year that I myself taught high school. I got my start teaching high school math, algebra, and geometry. And I was just chatting with a couple of folks last night, actually, about the resources that the school was able to provide me with on my the day before my first day, which was the textbook. And that was kind of it. I had a wonderful mentor teacher, but in the way of resources, it really was up to me to sort of figure out what to do and how to do it. And so we instead in CS50, over the course of the past several years, have initially focused on what's generally called open courseware, making the courses, curriculum, and materials, videos, homework assignments, quizzes, and more available to students. But then just a few years ago did we begin to pivot and to focus on incubating a community of and a collection of resources for teachers specifically, really focusing on, if you think of the network of students and teachers in the world, focusing more on the inner nodes of that tree and equipping the people closest to students with any resources or materials or tools that might allow them to create all the more of a better experience for their students. And especially these days where so many teachers are themselves new or a little green when it comes to computer science, maybe they're coming from math or some other field altogether, really providing an on-ramp for teachers like those to feel more comfortable themselves in the classroom. And so what we thought we'd do today is make sure everyone's on the same page as we proceed this weekend as to what awaits you this weekend, what awaits you beyond. And this is just a snippet of the resources and tools and curricular materials and more that you'll get a taste of this weekend. But it'll be, as Doug will likely say, a bit of a fire hose. But you'll see that there's any number of opportunities ahead. So in addition to things like lectures, which we teach here on campus and are led by me in Sanders Theater, with those come notes and slides and source code, subtitles, and transcripts. Those of you who have students for whom English is a second language or not even a language at all, we're beginning to make strides toward translating a lot of the course's materials. Problem sets, our word for homework assignments, including not only the homework itself and any sample code that comes with it, but the solutions there too. Sections are what we call here on campus the smaller scale classes led by our teaching fellows or teaching assistants, themselves typically students, undergraduates who have taken the course one or more years prior. And with sections come additional lesson plans, slides, and source code that many teachers find helpful to adopt or adapt in some form for their own classes, especially since we, for instance, here have but 12 weeks with our students. Typical high school might have 32, 36, 40 weeks or so. So there's a range of materials too that are accessible beyond what we even use here on campus. Shorts led by Doug, shorter videos that dive very specifically over just the course of a few minutes into specific topics, and then walkthroughs, as you may know from Zamyla. If you've yourself tackled the problem sets already, she is the one who's been embedded in those specifications and walks students through how to begin. In terms of tools, and we'll dive in deeper today and tomorrow into the particulars of these, and all these slides will be available online, so no need to jot everything down. This is just a visual of some of the tools available. So CS50 IDE is probably the one that students will get most familiar with. This is an integrated development environment, web-based, so you needn't have any IT folks at your school install anything like that. So long as you have internet connectivity in a browser, will this work? And for those of you who might even have limited internet connectivity, or who your students might have limited internet connectivity, can also be downloaded and used offline without internet as well. CS50 Library, a set of software that simplifies some of the earliest tasks that students might do in the first days of a class. CS50.me, which will be a tool that you'll see in greater detail over the coming months, that allows you to access all of the students' work that they might submit via the course's tool so that you can provide comment or feedback or download the grades that we've automatically computed for you, a quiz bank and programmer's manual to help students through new material, and then a sequence of similarly named tool, Check50, which is a correctness testing tool that students or you can use to test the correctness of your students' code, Debug50, which is a GUI-based debugger within CS50 IDE, so if you want to walk through code or your students want to walk through their code trying to find some issue and looking at the stack, looking at variables, values, can they do that? Help50, a tool that's meant to approximate what an astute teaching fellow or teacher might do in the classroom. If a student calls you over and has a bug in his or her code and they're not quite understanding the fairly arcane error message that the compiler itself is spitting out, they can actually run the output of the program that they don't understand through this tool, Help50, and we, via some regular expressions and heuristics, will provide them with teacher like rhetorical questions, you know, did you maybe leave off a semicolon on line such and such and so forth, to try to address the low-hanging fruit and FAQs that students might encounter. Render50, a tool that lets you take your students' source code if you want and turn it all into a PDF if you're in the habit of actually writing comments that way or just want to be able to print things out. Submit50, the tool with which students submit their work. Style50, a tool for automatically assessing how good the style is of students' code, so not just the correctness, but is everything nicely indented, do they have comments, and so forth, more of the aesthetic. And then ultimately, are many of these tools themselves built on industry standard tools and products themselves? So a number of the tools here rely on GitHub, a very popular website for version control. Travis CI, a very popular website for continuous deployment, so to speak, which means that when students are using these tools, even though they might be tailored very specifically to CS50, at the end of the day, they're gaining exposure to and experience with a range of real world tools. And indeed, CS50 IDE itself is built on a tool called Cloud9, recently acquired by Amazon. So this too is something that should be around for some time, and they might see it beyond. But then there's the more social support structures. So CS50 is a little unusual in that we've incubated, initially organically and now very much deliberately, pretty large groups online, especially Facebook and Reddit, Slack, Stack Exchange, Twitter, and beyond. In CS50's Facebook group alone, are there 100,000 plus learners around the world? And it's fascinating. If I pulled out my phone right now and asked a question, it'd be a little weird, I suppose, if I were asking the question. But within minutes, someone in some time zone around the world would likely chime in with some helpful advice. And so whether it's for you or for students, realize that well beyond your own classrooms are there folks out there, not just us, but other learners and teachers to provide support. And this is a visual of exactly that. Pictured here in red are all of our high school friends around the world, high school teachers and classrooms that have adopted or adapted CS50 in some form. In blue are universities that have done something similar, whether institutionally or via a student group that champions onboarding students with technology. To give you a sense of the community out there, here at Harvard, do we have some 600, 700 students in the fall semester when the course is offered and refreshed each year? About 150 students at Yale University, where the course is also offered in parallel. So literally, do we have students here and in New Haven doing pretty much day for day the same things with teaching fellows here, with teaching assistants there, and in a support structure that's equivalent on both campuses? Harvard Extension School is Harvard's continuing education program, particularly for adults doing continuing ed. I mean, do we have about 300 or so students every fall and spring engaging in that way? Many of you might know of edX, the online MOOC platform with which many universities are now affiliated. Through that channel, does the course had about 1 million or so registrants over the past several years, not all of whom are engaging actively, but quite a few of whom have in various ways, particularly in just these and other cities, both in the US and abroad. And so some of you yourselves are here from other countries. And indeed, do we have this growing network of students around the world who are engaging in some computer science as well. And then, of course, CS50 AP, now in its first official year and second actual year. We were beta testing and prototyping everything a year ago. And do we have about 150 high schools now teaching CS50 in some form and about 5,000 or so students, some of whom, just as you know, took the first ever CSP exam. And there's also variants of CS50, at least so titled like this, CS50 for MBAs, which has some additional materials that aren't focused so much on software and programming and computer science fundamentals, but on decision making around technology. And so there's a class I teach across the river at Harvard's Business School called exactly this, where we have about 100 students every year. And these materials, too, are freely available as open courseware. So if there's additional materials that catches your eye or your students, realize that that will be available as well. So this is just a picture of what the first week of class is typically like here. Very quickly do students find 1 p.m. lectures a little early in the day, so attendance starts to dwindle pretty quickly. We had wanted to give a tour of this yesterday, but beautiful though the space is, I just learned this morning that part of the roof fell down yesterday, or some plaster, so nothing too structural, hopefully. So that's why it was closed. So my apologies that we had to abort that, though it sounds particularly important to address. But this is where CS50's production team, the video experts on our team, capture a lot of the materials and the conceptual overviews that we provide. And indeed, among the goals of making these videos available is really to give students a glimpse of places like this and higher education and the opportunity to study beyond high school and university. And so do we try to capture a space like that as beautifully as this picture suggests. This, I thought, was apt to show here, too. This was our very first cohort of high school teachers now a couple years ago who joined us on stage for this photograph. And this was the first group of teachers who then, a few months later, went on to teach CS50 AP and the first beta test, really, of CSP with us just about 2 years ago now. These are some of our teachers a few months later in Washington, DC, where we held a similar workshop to this weekend. These were some of our teachers in the UK, in London, where we held one as well. This was just 3 weeks ago in the same seats, the most recent cohort to join us here in this past June. And then this was especially special, this moment. About a year and a half ago did we hold not just a CS50 hackathon, with which you might be familiar, but the first ever CS50 AP hackathon with about 8 schools in Manhattan, 4 public, 4 private, gathering here in Manhattan for students from all of these schools with their teachers to get together and work on maybe final projects, maybe problem sets. We held some walkthroughs, so to speak, some small-scale classes so students could meet Zamyla and get a bit of help and a leg up with some of the work. And so we would be thrilled, as an aside, moving forward, wherever you are in the world, to drop by for an afternoon or a day either ourselves or capture those kinds of things virtually and share them with local schools as well. These are some of our friends in Miami-Dade College, two of whom you'll meet here this weekend, working at the university level on CS50. These are some of our friends in, this was in Chile, abroad as well. These are our friends in London, Burma, Bolivia, and then most recently did Brian, Greg, and Christian, who you'll meet this weekend, spend a few days in Managua, Nicaragua, onboarding some of the teaching fellows there, not just in CS50, but in CS50 in Spanish, thanks to Brian, who's wonderfully fluent and expert at teaching. So if you have any questions today, feel free to ask, either in English or in Spanish, and this guy here will hopefully be able to field for you as well. And this is the mindset we'd encourage you to keep in mind, because what really characterizes CS50 beyond the material itself and the syllabus and beyond the resources and tools and so forth really is the overarching philosophy and the pedagogy that underlines the class. And this is literally a phrase in the course's syllabus and something I utter in the first hour of the class every fall semester, that for students, what ultimately matters in this course is not so much where they end up relative to their classmates, but where they in week 11, the end of the class for us on campus, end relative to themselves in week 0. And we really do take this to heart. As much as we've automated some of the more mechanizable aspects of programming projects and correctness testing and style testing, there's still very much a subjective and human element, providing students, for instance, with feedback on the design of their code, things more qualitative, and also very consciously in the course taking into account really the delta between the start and end of the class, whether that's between week 0 and 11 or week 0 and 31 in the case of a traditional high school syllabus, and having a much more thoughtful or methodical process when it comes to comparing students, if need be, taking into account whether they were less comfortable or more comfortable from the get-go or somewhere in between. And even here on campus, where we have quite a few students, we within CS50 at the college have different tracks for students that you'll hear more about this weekend, for literally those less comfortable, more comfortable, and somewhere in between. Students self-select into these tracks. You sort of know if you're a little nervous about being in the class the first day, odds are you're among those less comfortable. And if you've been, conversely, programming since you were 6 years old, 10 years old, you're probably among those more comfortable. And if you're not really sure, you're probably literally somewhere in between. And so we have different sections, in our case, at the college. Different teaching assistants will lead different tracks of sections. We have, though, within the homework assignments themselves, called problem sets, often different variants of the same problems. A more comfortable version, a less comfortable version. And you might have seen this yourself. If you dabbled with Mario, one of the first problem sets in CS50X, you might recall that in the less comfortable version of Mario, you have to build a pyramid that's relatively straightforward, geometrically. But for the more comfortable version, you have to do the same, but there's sort of a bump in the road. And sort of algorithmically, you have to think a little harder about how to achieve that. And so that allows students to have their own ceiling on just how high up they want to push themselves. To give you a sense of demographics, at least at the college here, among our undergraduates, 61% of them describe themselves as less comfortable. So CS50 is a course for majors and non-majors here alike, and at Yale as well. Ultimately, most students do identify themselves as among those less comfortable. And indeed, a supermajority of our students in CS50 at the college go on to be majors in other fields. And so a goal for CS50 is ultimately to satisfy and prepare both of these audiences for a foundation in computer science, but also enough technical savvy and practical skills and conceptual understanding so that they can go hold their own in some other field, whether it's the arts or sciences or humanities, social sciences, and can actually bring to bear some of the techniques and tools that they might learn in the CS class to domains of their own. So for those less familiar, here's a quick oversimplification of the arc of the class, categorized by the lecture's titles. We begin our semester with Scratch, as you may know, a graphical programming language from MIT's Media Lab that allows us to explore programming ideas without the distraction and the headaches and the inevitable bugs of semicolons and parentheses and quotes and stupid syntactic distractions that are important to master ultimately, but certainly not in the first hour of one's programming experience. But we transition quickly to C, more traditional low-level language, and explore topics like arrays and memory, how you can structure things and underneath the hood, algorithms themselves, searching and sorting and more, data structures, and actually memory itself. And in fact, this is one of the deepest dives we do in CS50, which is unusual, even among college and high school audiences, introductory these days, looking at pointers and memory management, looking as close to the hardware, so to speak, as we might. And then we talk about fairly sophisticated data structures, too, not just arrays and maybe linked lists, but also hash tables and trees and tries and perhaps other variants thereof, so that students really see the range of things they can construct at this lower level. But then about mid-semester, two-thirds of the way through, do we transition to a more familiar paradigm for students these days, talking about the web and software they might see on their phones and on laptops and desktops, talking about how the web itself works and the internet more generally via HTTP. This past year, thanks to our friends at Yale, did we introduce a machine learning component to the class, or artificial intelligence, looking at something called sentiment analysis with tweets. And then do we conclude the class by introducing students to a number of new paradigms that don't exist in C necessarily, but do exist in other languages like Python, SQL, and JavaScript. And then the tail end of the class, do students build web-based projects as well. And so they exit the class not having taken a class in C, but having taken an introduction to computer science in programming. And indeed, most students would say at the end that they didn't learn one language or the other, and there's no mindset around what language do you use in CS50. It's what languages do you use. And this has evolved over time. Some of you might know we used to use PHP for some time, but recently swapped that out for Python. And I don't doubt in a few years' time, even this arc will continue to evolve as well. In terms of the course's problems, and this is just a subset of the pool of problems we make available for high schools as well, where there's even a larger menu that you can choose from based on your comfort and your students and your time frame, we do begin our semester here with a problem set on Scratch, which really is as broad as make something that's of interest to you. Maybe it's a game, maybe it's something interactive or artistic in nature, but assemble the puzzle pieces and acquaint yourself with some of these paradigms. We introduce students to a number of C programs too, some of which you might be familiar with. familiar, but we quickly try to draw inspiration from domain-specific problems. So in the third homework assignment here at the college, we talk about CSER and CRACK and Vigenère, which is from the world of cryptography and security more generally. And we talk about the art of encrypting or scrambling information. We then pretty quickly introduce students to distribution code. So instead of starting with an empty window and an empty new file, we give them 100 or so lines of distribution code that we, the class, wrote. And we have them understand how to read someone else's code and how to understand where their contributions can be, already sort of preparing them for collaborations, whether it's with other classes or with ultimately colleagues, perhaps in industry. We then challenge them with a domain like forensics. As an aside, in graduate school, I had the opportunity to work for the local district attorney's office, where among the goals was to take in input from the local state police, which would be things like floppy drives and hard disks and so forth, and recover information that had either been deliberately or accidentally erased from those hard drives. And so we'd use that world to discuss things like data recovery and forensics. So we have students, for instance, try to recover lost photographs from a camera, whereby I accidentally every year delete some of my most important photographs. We make a forensic image, a copy of the memory card from the camera, zeros and ones all together, and then hand out that file. And students have to write a program in C to figure out where the JPEGs once were among those zeros and ones, and then recover them with high probability for us. Whodunit is sort of a puzzle whereby there's a secret image somehow embedded in a graphic that we give to students. And if you think back to at least a cereal box I vaguely remember getting as a kid, you have to take out this red piece of plastic or cellophane. You hold it up to your eyes, and you can see the hidden image. And we have them simulate that same idea in software, essentially turning their whole image red in some way to create that filter, and talking about graphics and how file formats themselves work. Then with our last big problem set in C, do we give students a really big text file with like 150,000 English words? And we challenge them to implement the fastest, most efficient spell checker that they can. How are they going to deal with that many words? What data structure? Should it just be a really long array? Should it be a more clever linked list? Should it be a hash table, a try? And we actually benchmark their code. How many seconds does it take for their spell checker to work? How many megabytes of RAM or memory do they consume? And we actually, on an opt-in basis, have a bit of a leaderboard. So students can kind of see how their code compares against mine, against other teaching staff, and against classmates as well. And then do we introduce, as I mentioned, web programming? And this most recent year, did we have students, given that the election was in progress and there was a lot of positive and negative sentiments on Twitter, we had them analyze those sentiments. And we gave students a big list of positive words that humans have generally considered to be positive and or happy thoughts, and a big list of negative words. And taking those words as input, did they have to analyze tweets from certain someones who were running for office and then decide green would be very positive tweets, red would be very negative tweets, yellow might be somewhere in between. And we had them implement a command line program and a little website that actually took as input a screen name from anyone on Twitter and then analyzed those tweets, drawing inspiration from the world of AI. With CS50 Finance, do we have students tap into Yahoo Finance? Has an API of sorts whereby you can get nearly real-time stock quotes from Yahoo. And so we have students implement a website where you can register for an account. You can log in with that account. You can get a stock quote by typing in like G-O-O-G for Google's stock ticker symbol and get back the current price. You can buy or sell stocks by seeding your account with like a virtual $10,000. And then you can watch the value of your portfolio sort of recklessly grow or fall over the course of the few days of this assignment. And on occasional years, too, we've actually had a leaderboard for this, too. And it's wonderfully fun to see some of our most astute, say, economic students or clever students figure out that nearly real-time stock quotes, not the same as real-time. And so if you just turn on like Bloomberg or the internet elsewhere, you can see what the price of a stock actually is now, whereas Yahoo Finance might think it was lower some 15 minutes ago. So our most clever students, I think, have turned 10,000 virtual dollars into 4 quadrillion over the course of 2 weeks. So very clever innovations there as well. And then lastly, do we have students implement something like Mashup, which mashes together, so to speak, Google News and Google Maps. And now you're seeing a zoomed in version of Stanford, California. And if I were to click on that little icon, I would see the most recent news articles pertaining to Stanford, California as of this morning, drawing the mapping data from Google Maps and drawing the news data from Google News. And so this is an opportunity for students to integrate a bit of JavaScript, a bit of SQL, a database that actually converts the zip codes to the corresponding geography and so forth, and really tie the whole problem set and ultimately course together. So it's quite the range. And indeed, those familiar with university curricula tend to think of CS50 as an amalgam of what most schools might call CS1 and CS2 combined, where CS1 might be programming alone, CS2 might be data structures, but we indeed combine those two worlds. But beyond the classroom, do we really focus on the social or the cultural aspect of CS50? And I do dare say this is a defining characteristic we hope for students' experience in the course. It's not just learning computer science, not just learning how to program, but really having a collective shared experience along the way. And this begins very early in the semester with something called CS50 Puzzle Day, where our friends from Facebook and our friends on staff write some riddles or problems to be solved that have nothing to do with CS per se. They don't even require a computer, and certainly not programming. They're really challenges that bring, in our case, some several hundred students together in teams of two or three or four to work on problems together for about 2 or 3 hours, after which we'll walk everyone through the solutions. And it's the most delightful, among the most delightful things we do, honestly, to see a whole bunch of like smart people in one room on a Saturday afternoon of all things, like working on puzzles together, and to have them delight in what the answers are or should have been if they struggled with them. And we do this to really send the message early on that CS is not about programming, as it's very often conflated, especially at the middle and high school level, or even with office applications and the like. But it really is about problem solving, irrespective of the tools you might use or the languages you might use. And so we begin the semester on that note. We, in our case, tend to try to have lunches with students to make a large class feel small. So every Friday, I and some of the TAs will just have more casual chit-chats over lunch with students. A CS50 coding contest, which is entirely online, a mid-semester opportunity. And once students have several weeks of C programming under their belt to compete playfully with each other on a leaderboard online, separate from the course's own homework assignments. CS50 Hackathon. A couple of visuals of which you saw a moment ago, which is really about bringing students together to work on their final projects or on homework assignments themselves. And we've used this in a few different ways. In our case, we use it at the end of the semester, really as a 12-hour opportunity to dive into your final project. Starts, in our case, at 7 p.m. We bring in typically Mexican food at 9 p.m. We bring in pizza from Domino's at 1 a.m. And then those that are still awake get driven to IHOP at 5 a.m. So they're in between all the meals is work actually happening. And we've also adopted a different paradigm with, say, some of our high school students, where instead of waiting till the end of the year, we do it in the middle of the semester. And we've done this with our friends at Miami-Dade College as well. And we found that doing events like this mid-semester, when many students might start to disengage, start to get a little overwhelmed, and sort of bringing people together in this more enthusiastic, energetic way to get them excited about the process of learning and building things has helped re-engage students who might otherwise have started to disengage more. And then finally is the culmination of the class in the CS50 Fair, and a celebration and exhibition of students' final projects, a couple of visuals which I'll share in just a sec. This, for instance, was one of our first CS50 Puzzle Days, students sitting right outside there on some of those sofas. This was one of our lunches some time ago, bringing students together just to casually chat about life after CS. This was one of our first CS50 Hackathons, which we held down the road at Microsoft. And this was probably around 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. This was around 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. This was one of our recent CS50 fairs, which on campus here draws some 2,000 or so students and faculty and staff. So not just the students in the class, but many other folks on campus. If you're somewhat local to Massachusetts or to Connecticut for Harvard or Yale, you yourselves are certainly welcome to come, or with your students. We had about 200, 250 high school students come to the Cambridge Fair last year, about 150 come to New Haven's as well. So it's been a nice way to bring those audiences together and give the undergraduates an additional body of students who are really interested in what they've built and what they themselves might build. And for the students, hopefully, the high school students, hopefully there's also an element of inspiration as well. And it really is an opportunity to do things like this, to show off to friends or attendees the projects with great surprise that you've been working on. So allow me to take just a few minutes to distinguish the few different variants of CS50s, just so you have a mental model of how this all fits in. Then we'll take a short break, and I'll turn things over to Doug to dive more into the course itself. So for reference, at the college, so here and at Yale, the course is structured as follows. We have a two-hour lecture once per week led by me and Sanders Theater, all of which is filmed, live streamed, and then made available via all of these different to all of these different audiences. We every week also have a 90-minute section or recitation, as it might be called. These are led by our teaching fellows or teaching assistants for about 10 to 20 students, the idea of which is to make a very large class, like 600 students, 150 students, feel much smaller and be much smaller, dive into material in more detail, ask questions if I didn't communicate something very well or things were confusing, go into additional examples, and really steer the conversation around those 10 to 20 students maximally. And so with these sections do come materials that we make available more broadly too. And then office hours are what we call one-on-one opportunities for help for students. So this isn't just me sitting in an office and students coming in and out. For us here at the college, this is, say, 100 plus students coming at night to the large library on campus, Widener Library, for a couple of hours in the evening, where we have a number of our staff on hand who just kind of mingle around. And whenever someone has a question, just calling one of us over to help get them unblocked. In particular. So it's not so much meant to be tutorials or classroom-like environments, but students just sitting there with their laptops on their computers working on problems until they get stuck or might need some conceptual explanation. We offer those as well. Beyond that, in terms of the course's official requirements, we do this over 12 weeks here in Cambridge. There are 8 problem sets, each of which contains one or more problems of varying scope, one test, so to speak, one quiz, which is a little shorter, and then most importantly, the final project, which really is the culmination of a student's experience in the class. And the final project is not specified by us, but by the students themselves. They're encouraged to, much like Scratch, where we begin the semester, build most anything of interest to them, so long as it somehow draws on the course's lessons. And we have our teaching fellows either approve or guide toward approval the students' proposals. And that process generally helps students rein themselves in if they want to sort of build Facebook. And well, you only have 3 weeks, so let's sort of focus on some subset of those features. Or if students haven't necessarily pushed them as much, do the teaching fellows similarly provide guidance upwards? And so it's an opportunity to help students, though, start from scratch on something they might want to build in any number of via any number of the course's lessons. CS50X, meanwhile, as it's called, is the MOOC version of the class, Massive Open Online Course. This is the variant of the course that's offered via edX. Curricularly, technologically, it is exactly the same. What students experience, though, is over the course of 52 weeks, where we make the course's materials literally available on January 1st, having just concluded the most recent fall semester. We leave those materials active and online for the entire year. And there's 8 problem sets and one final project. We don't administer the exams and quizzes online, because for the most part, students are engaging for their own edification. But they have access to everything that the students on campus do, but just not quite the same support structure. We here at the college, for our 700 or so students, we actually have a teaching staff beyond myself of about 80 to 100 of us, almost all of whom are undergraduates. And they are teaching fellows or teaching assistants and course assistants who lead the sections, who lead the office hours, who grade students' work. That doesn't scale to hundreds of thousands of folks online, but that's why there's this growing community of students and learners and teachers via those social channels mentioned before. And then lastly, there's CS50 AP, which again is curricularly, technologically equivalent to CS50 itself here. But it too is structured a little differently because the students experience it in a different way. On average, a teacher in a high school classroom might spend 36, give or take, some number of weeks. And so what we've done is adapted the course's curriculum and its materials via recommended schedules and via recommended pathways for students and teachers through the curriculum, but at a different pace, and optionally adding in or subtracting materials based on the teacher's needs, the student's needs, their own comfort level, and the like, ultimately toward satisfaction of the College Board's new APCSP, Computer Science Principles curriculum. And what's only different here is that the assessments, if teachers and their students have their students take the final exam through the College Board, are their 2 performance tasks, which you'll hear a bit more about, and 1 exam, which are distinct even among most of the College Board's AP exams. And these are aspects that are similar in spirit to what we do on campus, but tailored a bit more to their curriculum. And if we had to characterize, in summary, what it is CS50 is, I would say it's these 3 traits, distilled, the accessibility of the course. And by this we mean it's not an easy course and it's not a light course. Indeed, it's by design among, if not the most rigorous of the AP-CSP offerings. But what it is accessible, we hope. And by this I mean in 2007, when I took over the class, I would say that it ended with pretty high expectations, but it also kind of had expectations that weren't so low themselves as the student's prior background and comfort. And what we've tried to do over the past few years is change the slope of this on-ramp so that we still end at exactly the same point, so that the outcomes for students are no less high, but that the on-ramp is much more accessible to students literally with no prior background. To achieve this, it's not by lowering expectations of students, but providing all the more of a support structure, providing different tracks within the course or different tracks within the homework assignments, providing students with enough online and in-person resources that any student, irrespective of his or her prior background or lack thereof, can succeed, and ultimately evaluating students relative to where they actually began as opposed to just some absolute standard alone. So with accessibility, have we aspired to preserve this historical rigor while also introducing this fairly non-traditional aspect of community and culture and emphasizing that throughout, punctuating the semester or the year with these events like Puzzle Day and the Hackathon and the CS50 Fair, as well as emphasizing online and in the classroom the opportunity to collaborate with students subject to guidance from the course as to what means doing your work or doing someone else's work. More on that later today and tomorrow as well. But ultimately making students truly feel part of a little something special, we hope, and a part of an educational experience that is quite unlike most every other they might have. And indeed, in most most normal classes, you don't graduate with a t-shirt that says quite simply, I took CS50. But this really is meant to be that sort of badge of honor or statement of pride at the end, or maybe of like relief, took CS50, past tense. But hopefully they've gotten just so much out of it. And whether it's at the college or the high school level, the expectation and the hope really is that students get unusually more out of this one experience that will serve them well, not just in CS, but in any fields that these days are so very much informed by and supported by advances and uses of computing. So rather than have it be all me talk, I thought we'd conclude with just a snippet of what we do in our so-called week zero, the very first week of the class, wherein we focus not really on programming or software, but ultimately on computational thinking and getting students thinking about what it might mean to express themselves precisely and correctly, so much so that even a computer could do exactly what they say. And so toward this end, let's do this. Could we pass around some sheets of paper to everyone? Let me grab this. And these are the pens. If anyone needs a pen, we have a bunch of these. Aaron will pass. Does anyone need a pen? OK. Is that a yes? Yep. OK. Pen. OK. There you go. Pass a few back this way for me. Thank you. OK, thank you. All right, so we have two goals at hand, all of which are an opportunity to get everyone involved in some way or another. And I think initially what we're going to have to do is get, oh, and we have Doug, when you get a chance, in the back left as well. Need one brave volunteer who's comfortable with a small speaking role, but you also have to be comfortable appearing on the internet. But you'll be well supported. OK, come on down. We can make that happen. We can make that happen. Do you need the stress ball during the exercise? Okay, and Patty, yes? Okay, nice to see you again. Come on right up dead center. Welcome to Patty, thank you. Now I'm gonna go ahead and mute the screen and have Patty join me over here at the computer to look at what's on my screen, which is a picture of something. Okay. Patty's goal at hand is going to be to express only verbally how to draw that same picture, and you all, as the computers, if you will, can and should do only what Patty instructs. No questions. Computer really can't ask questions for clarification. So your goal is to be as precise and as correct as possible, and then we'll take a look at what everyone has implemented thereafter. Okay. So come on over here. Everyone should now have a piece of paper and a pen, and here comes
Don't
Patty's instructions. You can interpret this goal as however you wish.
Okay.
So long as it's all verbal.
Okay, so you have your paper in front of you. You're going to take your pen or pencil, your writing implement, and on, oh boy, which side of the paper? So when you're looking at it, you're going to take your pen, and on the Which side is this? Which side is that?
That's, well.
I know, you can't tell me. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Oh, I can't use my hands. See, this is hard for the Italian in me. All right. Wow, okay. It's gonna be backwards. Okay, so on the left, towards the left side of your paper, about an inch in, I hope that's the left side, put your pencil down. You will draw a straight-ish line about, your pen should be, can I back up?
Sure.
Okay, backing up.
Undo.
Undo. Is this on? Hello. Okay.
Yeah, it'll pick up on the video.
Okay, undo. Okay, so you're going to go down the piece of paper about a third of the way from the top and about an inch over from the left side. Taking your pen on the paper or pencil on the paper, you're going to draw a line about maybe 2 inches straight down. Straight down. Then you are going to not pick up that pen. I wonder if you did, put it back down on the same spot. Draw a parallel line, no, not parallel, perpendicular line about another 2 inches towards the opposite side of the paper, which I think is the right side at this point. Then keeping that same pen down, you're going to draw up to approximately the same location, straight up, parallel to where you started as a perpendicular line. And then you're going to make another perpendicular line drawing to the left and meet up with the original point where you started. Okay, that's figure one. Do we still have some more time here?
Yeah, we have another moment.
Okay, so now picking up your pen, you're gonna bring it over just about the same level as that top line on the first image that you drew. And you're going to put your pen down. And do they know what a circle is? Okay.
You can make any assumptions you want.
Okay. I assume that you know what a circle is. So I would like you to please draw a circle about the same height as the rectangle and about the same width. Now, going over about three quarters over from where you originally started with your point up at about the same horizontal line as where you started, put your pen down and draw a line from that point down to the right, to the left, approximately the same height as your square and circle. Oh boy. And then proceeding on that same point, that same axis, about a third of the way towards the end of the right side of the paper, you're going to draw a slant similar to the one you just drew. Ooh, that's like a little loop or something. Then you are going to draw a line of an approximately 45 degree angle to the right towards the end of the paper, about the same size, about 2 inches. And then you are going to also draw another up to the top, where you started, and another approximately 45 degree angle. I think that's wrong, but that's okay. And then you're going to put your pen down, and I'm going to be completely embarrassed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So let me come around with Aaron and just take a few anonymous submissions. Anyone who's comfortable sharing? Okay, over here. Thank you. Anyone else want to share, contribute? Yeah, okay. Pardon me. Okay, thank you. Okay. All right, that's a good sample. That's okay. I can reach. Okay, thank you. Thank you. All right. So let me go ahead and pull up my camera here.
You didn't get it right because you weren't listening to me.
Yeah. Clearly. So we have, let me do a sample of what we got back here. So here is one such submission. Whoops. Here's one such submission. All right, so we see some evidence of a square and some lines and circles. This is a different interpretation. Okay. This one got even more involved. But also some similar components. This one involved a diamond and a placeholder. And let's see, a couple other, oh, interest. This one involved an undo with a pen, apparently. And lastly was this one. Or maybe it was this way. Yeah, which, what we were looking for and what Patty was programming was actually this. So thank you to Patty. So there were some hints of these elements, though it seemed that Patty was initially going the direction of really low-level implementation details. Put your pen down here, make it this tall, toke a left, toke a right, and so forth, and not taking advantage of a topic that we might introduce at the very beginning of the semester, and indeed the same week, noted like abstraction. And indeed, for the second shape, Patty did arguably leverage some abstraction and just asked, you know, does everyone know what a circle is? And indeed, if you know what a circle is, well, that's really just an abstraction of some lower level operation that involves following some path that reconnects with itself with an equal radius or diameter the entire way. And my God, how much easier it is to draw a circle when you can call it by name than actually trying to describe it in terms of like the logo language from yesteryear in a little turtle drawing a similar shape. And similarly, did that abstraction help in when she began to call this a rectangle, or more specifically a square? But another fundamental approach might have been to leverage abstraction the whole time and say, draw a square that's maybe 2 inches across and tall, draw a circle next to it, draw a diagonal line. But now we really do have to be more precise, right? That's a square as most of us might draw it. But if you rotated it 45 degrees, it might look or sound like a diamond, but it's still a square and the orientation starts to matter. The circle too might need a very specific radius, as you tried to clarify with the height of the rectangle. The straight line could go from left to right, from southwest to northeast, or the opposite, or straight, or any number of other ways. And then, of course, the triangle could have different angles in here. And so it's kind of this hornet's nest of opportunities to clarify. And so even with this simple example, do we try to get students to start thinking about the ambiguities that are inherent even in our English language, and how important it's quickly going to be when they start programming things like this to be precise, and that it's OK if you have some bug in a program, because typically that's evidence of you're just not quite having anticipated some other interpretation of your same idea. And so with this first exercise, do we try to start cleaning up students' thoughts and getting them thinking a little more computationally, a little more algorithmically? But it would only be fair if we now flip this around and allow me to ask for one more volunteer, minor speaking role. This time, though, need you to do something else. OK, Lizzie?
Yeah.
Is it OK? Nice to see you again. Come on up. So Lizzie, this time, is also going to, welcome, yes. It's going to be a little different this time. This time we're going to have you be the computer with nothing but a piece of chalk. Here we have a whole group of programmers who will give instructions one at a time, and we'll do this collectively. And albeit a little awkward, we find that this is most effective if you come hide behind the projector screen so you don't see the answer. So literally come up and around. So there's a chalkboard on the other side where Lizzie will do her drawing. The one catch is you can't turn around because this is technically translucent, so you can see what's projected. But at least theoretically, only we will see. So I'm about to put the image on the screen. Don't turn around, but begin to draw as soon as the audience programs you for this. So, no, as before. Who would like to give the first instruction? Yes.
So, if you're familiar with Hangman, draw the stick.
Okay. That's quite the abstraction to assume.
The right forearm is pointing up, and the left forearm is angled at the hip.
Okay, the right forearm is pointed up, and the left arm is at the hip. So some maybe a little slight undos or modifications.
Print F high.
north, in the top left of the head. Okay, to draw a short line at a 45-degree angle.
And then above and to the left of that right high.
And above and to the left of that right high.
In print, not cursive.
In print, not cursive.
Capital
H. Capital H, lowercase I. I hear a lot of this. Okay, any other instructions?
Face has no details.
Face has no details. Just a big circle, and it's round.
No neck.
No hands.
No, hands.
No feet.
No shoes on.
No shoes on.
The line between high and the head is a negative slope. Yeah.
The line between high and the head is a negative slope.
Okay.
So we're kind of cleaning up our abstraction here. Any other additions? The arms, legs, and bodies are a total of 7 segments.
Yeah. Arms are capital L's.
The arms are also capital L's.
Rotated counterclockwise.
Rotated counterclockwise. Yes.
The hangman with listen attitude.
Look and listen to me attitude. The hangman has a look and listen to me attitude. I think we should stop with that instruction. All right, a big round of applause. All right, come on back around. So here is what you were drawing. Yeah, all right. And then let's go ahead and raise this. Here's what got drawn. Wow, wonderful. All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and take a 5-minute break here, and we'll resume with Doug Lloyd and more on the curriculum.